today we're going to start learning about Parshas Chayei Tzara. One of the beauties of the Tzenah Arena is that every week it's very different. As I prepare the shiur, each parsha has its own flavor, there's a different focus, and it uses different sources to help explain an approach to the parsha. This parsha was a little challenging to prepare. I wasn't familiar with all the sources that were being quoted, and some of them grated on my modern sensibilities, as many of them were new and unfamiliar to me. I realized that this in itself is valuable, to feel a little bit uncomfortable and have to really grapple with the themes that are being discussed. Once I dug into the parsha more and I thought about it, I came away with some very powerful lessons regarding emotions, death, and relationships. And it really gets to the heart of what life and people are all about. Part of the challenge was how it talked about the avos and imahos and the danger inherent in those conversations. It says in the Gemara, Shabbos, Kuf Yud Beis, Im Rishonim bnei malachim, anu bnei adam, v'im Rishonim bnei anashim, anu kachamorim. If the people in the original people, meaning the Gedolim from long ago, are like Malachim, then we can be compared to regular human beings. But if we consider the earlier ones as if they are regular people, then we are only donkeys, and not like holy donkeys of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa and Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, who showed a spiritual attunement. Rather, we're just like every other donkey. So the Gemara is telling us that we can't look at our avos as regular people, because if we do so, we're diminishing them and thereby diminishing ourselves. Rav Aaron Cutler, Zatzal, describes the approach that we need to take. He says, we're talking about people who are clean from any self-interest and desire. We can't comprehend their level. Just like we have no point of reference how we can relate to Malachim, we have no way to value the avos and understand their level. A malach, when we talk about malachim, we don't have the words to describe it because it's so far away from our experience. And that's how we also have to relate to the avos. The words in the Torah are using words that seem like they're talking about what we experience, but it's really on a completely different sphere. So why does the Torah write about our avos in such down-to-earth ways? It writes about our avos for our benefit, so we can learn deep truths about our own lives from the way they live their lives. In addition, when Hashem was giving the Torah to the Jewish people, the Malachim complained. Hashem tells Moshe to respond. Moshe asks the Malachim, do you have parents to keep it out of aim? Can you murder? Can you be jealous? And they said no, and they acknowledged that people were the ones who needed to get the Torah. Hashem made us imperfect. He made us with emotions so that we can become greater than the Malachim. Malachim sing Shira to Hashem every day. But Hashem waits for when we, imperfect human beings, sing Shira, sing praise to Hashem. The stories of the Avos are there to help us understand how to become our best selves. So while we're learning the stories of the Avos, we can't minimize the greatness of the Avos. And so to understand Parshas Chayei Tzara and where we're going to get to these lessons, we need to go back to Parshas Vayera. There, Hashem gives Avram a command to bring his son Yitzchak, as a carbon. Avram had no hesitation. He was going to listen to Hashem no matter what. But here was his dilemma. If he didn't tell Sarah about the Akedah, and then she would find out that she would never see her son again, she would kill herself from her unmatched anguish. And if he told her about the Akedah, she might become emotional and flighty and not give him permission to bring Yitzchak as a carbon. According to the Medrash, Avram came up with a plan. He told Sarah to make a beautiful party just for the two of them. As they were sitting and happy, Avram broaches the topic. He says, I was 3 years old when I recognized Hashem. Our son is already 37. I want him to start becoming familiar with the mitzvos. Tomorrow, I'm going to go with him to bring a carbon to Hashem on Har HaMoriah. I want to take him with me, implying that Yitzchak would stay there and learn. Sarah heard this and said, of course, go. The next day, Avram is still concerned about Sarah. So he wakes up early and goes on his way with Yitzchak as Sarah slept, so she couldn't change her mind. Why did Avram assume Sarah would be so weak? And why did he sneak out? The reason given by the Tzenah Arena is the phrase, Nashim Daitan Kalos, women's minds are light. I've always found this phrase irritating, as sometimes it's thrown around as an insult, as opposed to how it's used in a strict religious content in the Gemara or in Halacha. And so I've associated it with a lot of negative feelings. But when it was brought up by the Tzenah Arena, I needed to think about it. Thinking about it helped me understand the phrase more. In this case, Avram and Sarah have the same goals. She wants Yitzchak to go. She wants to do the right thing. At the moment of parting, would Sarah Imenu's emotions as a mother who's waited 99 years for the son, be so overwhelming that those emotions could be resisted? Avraham Avinu did not want Sarah to face that choice because the emotions could overwhelm what she truly wanted. In that case, Nashim Daitan Kalos, that her true wishes, her true opinion, could be swayed by something so powerful. The Satan is not happy with this. He starts trying to attack everyone's weakness. Avraham, he uses psychological warfare to make Avraham Avinu doubt his mission, to make him feel guilty and feel regret that he's about to lose his son. The Satan then goes to Yitzchak and tells him, your father is about to kill you. Yitzchak hears the news and is resolute to be an Oletzmima, a pure carbon, and he does not get defensive. The last piece of psychological warfare is when the Satan goes to Sarah and he tells her, you are never seeing your son alive again. Sarah's response is strong. If that is what Hashem wants, then I also agree to it. Let the name of Hashem be blessed. Seeing that he's not getting anywhere with these tactics, the Satan tries other tactics, making it physically challenging for Avraham to reach the place of the Akedah. Everyone has been forewarned that the Satan is trying to stop their mission. Up on Har HaMoriah, Yitzchak begs his father to tie him down so he doesn't squirm and make himself an invalid carbon. While he's ready to be shechted, one thing concerns him. He asks his father to be careful when breaking the news to Sarah. If Sarah is standing on a roof or next to the pit, when she hears news, she could fall from the fright of hearing that her beloved son Yitzchak was shechted and slaughtered by her husband. Again, there is a sense of understanding in the parsha that Yitzchak Avinu has an understanding of Sarah Imenu. I had never heard this before. He was concerned about her natural maternal reaction. In Parshas Chaye Sarah, as we jump ahead, what Yitzchak and Avraham feared is indeed what actually happened. Right after the Akedah, the Torah tells us that Sarah died. What is the reason for this juxtaposition? The placement of the two stories are there to teach us that they are connected. The Medrash quoted by Tena Urena says that Sarah is home minding her own business when the Satan comes to her and said Yitzchak was tied up and about to be shechted. She was so frightened that Sarah died instantaneously. What I learned from this, as we have been discussing, is that we are not held responsible to our initial reaction to a shock. Sometimes a shock can overwhelm our physical body, but after the shock is where greatness lies. At that moment, we can pause and choose with our mind and souls what our emotional response will be rather than what it initially was. This is where our parsha begins, with the death of Sarah, caused by the Akedas Yitzchak. It then tells us that Avram came from Be'er Sheva to bury Sarah, and then it says that he came to eulogize her and cry for her. Rabbeinu Bachaye asks an important question. Where is Yitzchak? Why is he not here crying over his mother, who loved him and protected him from Yishmael, who did everything that he should have a life of Torah and mitzvos and made him who he was? She had such a perfect home that had harmony, kindness, she was God-fearing. Where was Yitzchak? The answer the Rabbeinu Bachaye, quoted by the Tzen Arena, gives continues the theme we have seen in this parsha. The answer is that Yitzchak isn't mentioned, as he didn't know entirely why and how Sarah died. They didn't want to tell him so he wouldn't start thinking that it was his fault and that he caused his mother to die because she heard he had been tied down. Indeed, she was so frightened that her soul left her. So they didn't tell Yitzchak the full story. The pasuk doesn't say that Yitzchak cried or that he participated in her burial in any meaningful way or even that he delivered a hesped because he didn't know fully what was going on. This follows along the message we have seen before. Yitzchak just allowed himself to be sacrificed. He was an Ola Tamima who could not leave the lands of Israel. And yet, Avram Avinu did not want to cause Yitzchak pain for something that was beyond his control. The Toldos Yitzchak asks a question about these events. The Pasuk says that Avram first eulogized Sarah, and then he cried. The order should be, after he hears about his wife of so long about her death, it should say that he cried, and then he eulogized her. The Toldos Yitzchak gives a remarkable explanation that fits in with our theme. After the Akedah, Avram was ecstatic because of so many things. After resolving to sacrifice his precious son, at the very end, Yitzchak was allowed to remain alive. And then he hears the news that his brother had a granddaughter who would be the perfect match for his son. She would be a tzaddikah, she would be righteous, she came from the right family, and she had good, refined character. What could be better? He now has a future with his son, and he's going to have grandchildren. And so Avram wasn't in the state of mind to cry. So what did he do? He started to talk about Sarah and all of her wonderful deeds, and he began to feel a little bit, and so then he could cry for her. The cuff is written with a small cuff because he only cried a little, because at that moment, inside, he was so happy he still had his son, and that his son was not only alive, that he had a future, that he, while he was sad, his other emotion was more powerful. Again, the Tzenna Rena is teaching us that we can hold two emotions, and we sometimes can't control the degree to those of those emotions. We can do our part to create the emotional state we want and do the behaviors we need, but we will still feel the emotions that we do. The Baal HaTurim taught a parallel lesson. Avraham only cried a little bit because Sarah Imenu was elderly when she died. And when an old person dies, there's not the same level of grief and heartbreak as when a young person dies in the prime of their life. I thought this lesson was important and reflects an emotional reality of what grief looks like after a life well lived. There is sadness, there is loss, but there is also gratitude and joy for the years together. At this point in the Tzenna Rena, the Chizkuni asks a question we've heard before in a little bit of a different way. How come Avram was in Chevron anyway? Why was Sarah there, and why does it tell us where she died? What's the relevance? The Chizkuni answers, as we've said before, that there was real concern about Sarah's health if she were to hear the news of the Akedah. So Avram sent Sarah to a small place where news wouldn't reach so easily, where she wouldn't hear that Yitzchak had been shechted. And despite Avram's best attempts, it was precisely for that reason that the Satan went to schmooze with Sarah there and told her all about every detail of what was happening to Yitzchak, how he was being shechted on Har HaMoriah, and that at that moment where she hears that he's on Har HaMoriah bound up, at that moment her neshama left and she died. The Malach was going to tell her that at the last moment it all worked out, but it was too late and he couldn't finish the sentence. Another explanation brought as to why Sarah Imenu was in Chevron is that she was a sickly woman who didn't feel well. Avram sent her to Chevron for the fresh air and to rest and recover. And in the meantime, she heard the news and she was too weak to survive it. The Parsha ends with another window into emotional reality. At the end of the Parsha, it tells us how Yitzchak brought his wife to the tent of Sarah, his mother. For a newlywed, why is it mentioning his mother? Did Rivka actually move into the same physical tent? Had it been redecorated? The answer the Tzenna Rena brings touches on the grief a child feels for a parent in a very profound way. When Yitzchak got married, he felt like in some ways he got his mother back and she was alive again. All of Sarah's talents and righteousness and fine midos had left a gaping hole in his life. Sarah always had her Shabbos candles lit from week to week. The Shabbos candles being lit from week to week represent peace always being in the home. Shalom bayis. There was always fresh challah in the home from week to week, and this symbolizes material goodness, blessing found in all the material possessions in the home. And there was a cloud that hovered above the tent. This represents that there was a shechina, there was a virtuality that surrounded everything Sarah Imenu did in her home. When Sarah died, Yitzchak's home became a shell of what it once was, and it wasn't replaced until Rivka came. And when Rivka came, the first time she lit candles, they stayed lit from week to week. There was harmony in the home. The bracha entered back into the dough that had been gone for 3 years, and the cloud of the Shekhinah came back down to rest on Yitzchak's tent. When Sarah had died, these three fundamental things had stopped. And at the moment Yitzchak married Rivka, these three things were renewed again. And so while Yitzchak knew he was marrying his wife, he also saw in his wife something of his mother that only a son could see. And so the Pasuk tells us that at that moment, he was comforted on the loss of his mother. The Tzenna Rena concludes with an emotional lesson into the bonds between a mother and son. That the way of the world is that as long as a man's mother is alive, a piece of him stays with his mother. But when his mother dies and the man marries, that attachment transfers and he finds that attachment with his wife. So as we've seen throughout this Parsha, we have explored how emotions are discussed in the Parsha. Is that emotions are not good or bad and they must be accepted as they are. Emotions exist. There is no judgment of Sarah dying from shock. Yitzchak is not expected to get over his mother's death or to find the positive in her death before he gets married. The fact that Avraham had to conjure up sadness to counter his joy was not bad or good. It just was. There is this phenomenon in our culture called toxic positivity. Something tragic happens and immediately people are jumping to show the positive side of it. Everything gets a positive spin. And if you feel sad for more than 10 minutes, it's a problem. Or if you can't take a lesson within the first 5 minutes of a tragedy, then a person isn't reflecting enough. That's not what happens in this week's Parsha. Sarah had a shock and she dies immediately before she could think. And her family each grieve in a way that was appropriate for them. From the Parsha, we learn that grief, shock, and joy must be acknowledged before we grow from them. And the Avos are our role models for what growth truly is. We feel. We must admit that we feel. We struggle and we move forward slowly at a pace that is natural. And in that balance of acceptance and action is where we will find our path to greatness. Have a good Shabbos.